Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast on the Youth Critic Network. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me this week for the show is David Weiser from Film Assessment.
Hey, everybody.
And joining us as our guest this week is Richard Newby from The Hollywood Reporter and just a whole bunch of other things. But yeah, Richard Newby.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Richard, since you're the guest of the show, what movie are we talking about this week?
We're talking about F9, The Fast Saga.
I used to live my life a quarter mile at a time. But things changed. My father now. I will always be in your heart.
Little Brian, I have a gift for you.
Your daddy gave me this.
Now I'm gonna give it to you. It's very special. It's for protection from what's coming.
All right, Dom, what's next?
No matter how fast you are,
not to be compared to you.
No one outruns their past.
I am more easy, you trying your best to become me.
And mine just caught up to me.
Been a long time, Dom.
So we're up against a master thief, assassin, high performance driver. Who is he?
Yes.
Jacob is.
Yes. Dom's finally, brother. After 4 years of waiting, what seems like an eternity and one spinoff movie in between that, we finally get the continuation of the Dominic Toretto family saga of, you know, the Fast and Furious saga. It's been long awaited. It's been highly anticipated, especially since the first trailer in January of 2021, and been highly anticipated. So just starting with you, Richard, what were your general thoughts on F9, The Fast Saga?
I had a good time with the film. You know, I didn't come into the Fast and Furious movies like as they came out. So Fate of the Furious was actually the first one that I had seen in theaters. So I had like started watching them in 2016 and caught up. So for me, like seeing them in the theaters is still like pretty cool. Like I don't have any of the franchise fatigue that some people might have. You know, they're just really, for me, just a really fun, you know, theatrical experience with fun characters and big special effects. And I had a good time. You know, my expectations were only to have a good time and to enjoy some of the ridiculousness of it. And I definitely think that it met my expectations on that point.
All right, David.
Oh, I totally agree. I came into this franchise with Fast 5, and I've been seeing them in theaters since then. I'm not huge on this franchise, but I've liked 5, 6, 7, and then I liked Hobbs and Shaw, and then I really enjoyed this. It was a good time. Genuinely good cinematography that I wasn't expecting. I feel like Justin Lin coming back was like a huge win for this franchise. Like I felt like it was sorely missing him in Fate of the Furious, so it was nice to see him back. the wheel, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a way, I mean, he's kind of like the Dan Harmon of the franchise. He's kind of like trying to think of other like showrunners that, you know, or Scott M. Gimple for The Walking Dead. I mean, he's kind of the guy that didn't necessarily start the franchise, because this franchise started with, you know, Gary Scott Thompson, David Ayer, Rob Cohen. I think there was another writer involved, but I don't know their name. And then, you know, and then Too Fast, Too Furious had different writers and directors again, with John Singleton coming in. And then finally, Justin Lin and Chris Morgan took over the franchise, and it's been a steady climb ever since until more recent entries. And we'll get to that in a second, but yeah. But from my experience, I saw Fast Five first, but I saw it on DVD. And then when Fast and Furious 6 came out, I went and saw that in the theater, and I've been going to each one in the theater ever since. So, and then I finally caught up to all of them around Fate of the Furious, and I was amused. And the biggest surprise of all was Tokyo Drift. That was the biggest, like, I always thought Tokyo Drift was the weird one out, but it's really like, oh wow, this is like a very good movie.
Yeah.
But yeah. And that's where everything started for Justin Lin. In I don't know for you guys, but what was, so, because I think we all kind of started at different places. What was the film that got all of you to jump in into this franchise, if it wasn't the first one?
Definitely Fast Five for me. And I have a funny story about watching them. My dad had them on DVD, and because Fast and the Furious and The Fast and the Furious had such similar titles, I accidentally watched the fourth one first, thinking it was the first one. And then I watched Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift and so on, because I ended up watching them before the sixth one came out, because I had never seen any of them before the fifth one. That was the first one I ever saw. I didn't even know the franchise existed. I think I was too young when it was popular, I guess. So I ended up revisiting them totally out of release order, and that was interesting.
For you, Richard?
Yeah, it was Fast Five for me. I watched them all in order, and I remember them all coming out. I think I was in middle school when the first one came out, but I was just never really interested in it, because I always just kind of associated them as being like movies about like car culture and less like action movies. And I think, you know, there's some of that definitely in the first three, but I watched them all in order, and I enjoy, you know, the first four, but I think Fast Five is where it really hooked me in, and I was like, all right, this is awesome. I love seeing the different characters interact. I love that it's kind of moving away from the street races and stuff. So yeah, for me, Fast Five is definitely the high point where I was fully on board with the franchise.
And it's the one that skips all the street racing. Like, it's the one that has a street, like a build up to a street race, and then cuts to the end of it.
Yeah.
Which I always thought that was kind of funny. You know, it's like a nice nod, but also a nice dig at the same time. But it's just funny because, I mean, just there is an actual street race in Fast Five, and it's like the best one out of all of like the street racing in each movie. Like, yeah. Or at least up to that point. So, yeah. But I think it was you, David. Justin Lin, you know, leaving the franchise at six, like, I understand why he wanted to leave, because it, you know, six is the end of a trilogy. You know, it's the end of a prequel trilogy, if you guys will humor me. Because it does take place between, you know, it takes place between two and three. But in a way, you know, it's the end of his trilogy. And then on top of that, like, it's, you know, it's fine. If the franchise is going to go on, you might as well hand it to other filmmakers. And I think James Wan carried those kind of themes and kind of those ideas of the vehicular destruction forward. But I think it kind of got lost in not just Fate of the Furious, but also Hobbs and Shaw as well, which Hobbs and Shaw is not really a car movie at all. So it's just more of a generic action movie. But But yeah, so going into it, I just kind of wanted to, before we go into F9, I wanted to know, like, why do you guys think this franchise has endured? Because it's a 20-year-old franchise. Why, with no reboots, no anything, why do you think it's endured? Starting with you, Richard, what do you think?
I think it's the characters. I mentioned this on Twitter last week, but I think that the characters are so much fun to watch, and their dynamics together. Like, you could really, like, put them in any genre, which I think is why the franchise has lasted as long as it has. You know, you can shift from the drag racing stuff into, you know, action movies, into the espionage spy world, which we're in right now. You know, even though it's been kind of an ongoing joke online about seeing the characters cross over with Jurassic Park or Transformers, like, I think the characters are so much fun that you could easily see, like, any of them fitting into that world. You know, the interactions between Roman and Tej and Ramsey, and the relationship between Dom and Brian, or Han and Giselle. Like, these are all such fun interactions. So really, like, even if it's, like, you know, action beats or story beats that I've seen before, I keep coming back because, I mean, the characters are just fun to watch.
Right, and for you, David?
I think it's that the franchise knew when to change, and it's, like, kind of been steadily evolving ever since, like Richard was just saying about, in terms of changing genre. And then, similar to Mission Impossible, but in a very different way, it escalates their stunts with each new entry to a new level of ridiculousness, whereas Mission Impossible still stays somewhat grounded. But those, with each new Mission Impossible movie, you know there's going to be some new crazy stunt that Tom Cruise actually performs. And that's a huge drawing point. And I think for Fast and the Furious movies, starting with about 5, they kind of introduced this aspect of these new kind of, like, crazy ridiculous stunts with, like, the safe chase. There was, like, the whole, like, runway thing in 6. 7, I guess they, the tank thing. Then in 7, they're drone warfare in the city, and then, like, the whole thing with, like, Brian. Oh, they come out of planes and stuff.
Yeah,
with cars. Yeah,
and then 8, they go against a submarine. Now they're going into space, and but I guess, well, they have magnets, and super powered magnets.
And in 8, they also have zombie cars. So, I mean, not like zombie cars, but they have cars that are, like, you know, just are driving themselves, you know, in a way. And it's all plausibly, plausibly described. But still, it's interesting. And for me, like, I think one of the reasons there is a mainstay for this franchise is because I think it's all of the above of what you guys have also said, but I would also, you know, throw in, it's also, like, everyone is being very sincere, or mostly everyone's being very sincere about their performance. You know, like, everyone is treating, you know, being thrown, you know, from, you know, tank to tank, you know, like, oh, this is, like, a real thing that just happened. There's no winking at the audience. Well, for mostly everyone, I'll single out one actor in just a second, but for the most part, everyone is. I mean, even Vin Diesel, like, in Fate of the Furious, I mean, he's treating everything that's happening to him like it's Shakespeare. And I think that's, you know, probably, to me, one of the more important things. And then also, David, you were right, that the franchise knew when to change, and then they just kept evolving. Because even F7, it's more of a Death Wish movie. It's like, you know, it's combining, you know, a spy thriller with a Death Wish movie. And then 8 is kind of like a buddy cop movie mixed with a cyber warfare movie, if sort of. I don't know. 8 is always weird. 8's kind of a weird, like, kind of one of those movies that bends backwards. And then I don't really know, I guess, and then Hobbs and Shaw just is a buddy cop movie. But I think that's, and then F9 is more about, it's just kind of more of the same of F6 and F7. But, you know, maybe, but yeah, we'll kind of, but yeah, that's kind of, but still, like, there is, you know, everything coming back, you know, everything coming back to form. And with that, so what did everyone think about F9? Like, and what did we think?
I really liked it. I was really hooked by the opening of it. I love the flashback opening. I thought that was a really cool thing to see. I like that they actually cast different actors for young Dom and Jacob instead of like digitally de-aging them. I think that digitally de-aging like can work really well sometimes, but I feel like when you're going that far back, I just feel like it would have been pretty weird. But I also feel like Justin Lin like added a lot of like texture and like the whole graininess of like the 1989 footage. I thought that was really cool. Definitely like on the big screen, it definitely like set the bar pretty high. Yeah, I think, you know, going back to what you were saying about Vin Diesel like taking this like really seriously and treating it almost like Shakespeare. You know, I feel like there is, you know, something of a Godfather Part Two element in terms of how the film is both reaching back and reaching forward. I mean, not to like suggest that F9 is like anywhere like, you know, close to the Coppola's film, but just in terms of like,
it's very, you know, close though. You know, it's just very close.
But yeah, just in terms of what I think, you know, Diesel is aiming for, you know, in terms of building his mythology for this franchise. I did think that it was cool to reflect back and then also, you know, push it forward as we, you know, set the stage for the final two-parter.
Right. And yeah, and David, go ahead.
And then, I mean, we kind of joked about this early on, but like, I mean, the franchise's focus on family is really sincere. And I really liked those scenes with Brian at the beginning in their like little isolated farmhouse. I thought that was really sweet. And I really liked when they thought someone was coming, they had like that whole plan with him like hiding out in the little mini bunker thing. Like they had that little, like, I don't know, in their shed.
The one where someone could easily find it in a minute.
Yeah.
But hey, it's what you do. It's what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
And how Dom is kind of, Dom and Letty, like, I like this, where their arc is going in terms of them kind of confronting the fact that they're not really geared for, like, the kind of at-home family life versus, like, what they've been doing, all these, like, wild, crazy adventures. And Letty kind of coming to grips with that over the course of the movie. I liked that. I mean, we've attested how ridiculous it was. It was just really entertaining. I thought the stunt work was great. And the action was really, and like, it kept my attention the entire time. I was really surprised that Michael Rooker was in it. I had no idea he was gonna be in it. So that was...
I was wondering to myself, is that Michael Rooker? Is that Yondu? No way. But then it was like, yeah, oh my God, it is. And it's like, if only Sylvester Stallone was here, we'd have another cliffhanger reunion.
Michael Rooker, yeah. Outside of a James Gunn movie? What?
I know. Hey, good for him, though. Good for him, though. Yeah. I'm happy for him. And he's good in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has some good scenes. He has some nice like heartfelt emotional scenes that I feel like ground some of the thematic messages of the film.
Oh my gosh! And John Cena, he was such a great addition to this cast. Like I can't even, I don't even know how that went over my head just now, but yeah, I think he fits this franchise perfectly, and I hope he returns for 10 and 11.
Yeah, he was really fun to watch. I did laugh a little bit about him like fitting inside of those small sports cars and like the agility in which he like moves in like through the window. I'm like, because he's a huge dude, and I'm like, there's no way. But like that's just like one of the fun aspects about the franchise that I love. You know, those like little ridiculous touches. I just feel, you know, I feel like when so many franchises are working really hard to kind of stay grounded, you know, I like that the Fast and Furious franchise is just going for like this big, you know, blockbuster entertainment that can be silly, but it's also heartfelt.
And I think that's part of the appeal of this franchise is that in the, you know, we have so many comic book movie franchises, and for that period of time, we had so many of them try and go, you know, the Nolan route with being, you know, gritty and realistic. Of course, Whedon kind of took everything in a different direction with the Avengers, and then Marvel kind of spun that, you know, in its own way. But, you know, for the longest time, I mean, the Fast and Furious franchise was kind of like the one franchise where it's just like, this is ridiculous, this is fun, but you're not losing yourself. You're not losing yourself to it. You know, you're not getting overly like, you know, it's not super grounded. And that's great. And it works because the Mission Impossible franchise, like David said, it's still grounded. And then the John Wick franchise kind of goes from grounded to stupid sometimes, like from film to film or from stunt to stunt. So, but it's still awesome. So nonetheless, but yeah, so it's one of the rare franchises where it's just an action franchise with characters and not IP or not source. There's no source material. So there's no like, oh my God, are they going to bring in this character? Are they going to bring in,
yeah,
you know, there's none of that. It's very much like, you know, everything, you know, they could introduce, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger as a villain in the next movie, and that's related somehow to Letty, and we would all be like, "Okay, great, whatever."
Now that you said that, I really want that to happen.
whoops! I mean, it'll be in the press. yeah, wouldn't that be something?
Dustin Lin, if you're watching.
Justin, I'll tag Justin on Twitter or Instagram, wherever I can find him. I'll tag him into the podcast. But yeah, for me, my thoughts, Richard, you brought up the opening. I love the opening. Funny story about the opening. So there's like a Jurassic World preview going around all these IMAX screenings. And I actually went to an IMAX screening that didn't have the Jurassic World Dominion preview.
So when I watched it, I assumed it would be like with the trailers. I didn't know it was like attached to the movie itself. So All the trailers finished and it didn't show. And I was like, they're really not going to show this? And then before the Universal logo, like then they actually started with it. And then I was like, okay, finally.
So, but that didn't happen. So for like the first, like, you know how like the movie opens with like kind of a, like a weird transparent, you know, opening and then it kind of, you know, goes into focus on Toretto's helmet. And I'm like, oh my God, the Fast and Furious franchise and the Jurassic Park franchise are now connected. Like this, like for like 2 or 3 minutes, I'm like, because Fast 9 opens with the 1990 Universal opening.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool, shit. Colin Trevorrow's going old school here with, you know. So, yeah. Anyway, I love the opening, and I did love the graininess. And what's even, for me, it was even more surreal watching it because I had just watched Fast and Furious earlier this month, and I had heard how Dom's father died, and how it's described. And I don't know if I put this on Twitter or if I put this in my review on Letterboxd, but the way Dom's dad dies, the way Dom describes it, it's so eerily similar to Paul Walker's death in real life. So for me, seeing like it in full action was just like a surreal, like horror moment. And then to see like Dom, young Dom, you know, react to it and actually scream, and that be the actual scream that, you know, he thought it was his dad's, but everyone said it was his. I mean, that's so, I mean, just truly powerful stuff. And then in the back, you just see Jacob just like, holy shit. Like, you just wonder, like, he's just, you know, just standing there just like as a statue, because he knows what he's done. It's just great. It's great filmmaking. It's absolutely great filmmaking. And I love how the story, like that whole flashback, is interwoven into each act of the story. Like, it's wonderful. And it has an absolutely like tear-jerking conclusion, like a really good conclusion.
Yeah.
And it brings it full circle with what, how Jacob's arc and story is resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So is there any more, I should say this real quick, is there any more things we want to talk about the movie before we go into spoilers? Just anything?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. That wouldn't be like entering spoiler territory.
Okay. And same for you, David?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We're putting a spoiler warning. Go see F9. I think we're all in agreement. It's a good movie. We recommend it. And then come back for later to come back to this point and continue on. And yeah, so I love the reveal that Jacob was the one that killed his father, as I do air quotes. Or killed the dad, and that's the twist of the story. For me, that my only issue with that, and this is really the only qualm I have with the movie, is that Dom has forgiven Deckard Shaw for something, for the almost the same thing in Fate of the Furious, and but he's still holding a grudge to Jacob about his dad. That for me was the one thing I was kind of like, doesn't really connect well.
Maybe it's because it's the sense of, like, because he has such a strong emphasis on family, it's a sense of family betraying family, whereas Deckard Shaw wasn't a part of their family to begin with. He's this outsider, you know, so it doesn't feel as personal to him.
What do you think, Richard?
Yeah. I mean, I buy that. I also just feel like, you know, his dad is like his whole, you know, reason for doing what he does. You know, all of the life lessons he learned were from his dad. And I think that, you know, while Han is family, I feel like, you know, the loss of a father, especially, you know, at a formative age, you know, I think that'd be something really hard to overcome.
Right. And that's all fair. It's just one of those, I feel like it would be a more stronger story if Dom had forgiven Jacob, but just never have had that conversation because he doesn't know where Jacob is. And also, like, he's a dad now, so it's like, I have to take care of my kid. If Jacob ever wants to have that conversation, we'll have it. But here, it's still, you know, more anger, but sure, I mean, it is more personal, and I think that is the arc, that's supposedly the arc of the movie, is to understand Jacob's motive behind the whole thing. And try and see it from him. Because Jacob is a very much in this movie. I mean, he's a hurt kid. Deep down inside, he's that 17-year-old kid that is the cause of his father's death, and he has to carry that weight. And that weight is in the form of, you know, of everything of John Cena, in a way. And, you know, and now he is teaming up with this German brat kid to basically, you know, upend all fathers, upend, you know, every upend the generations, if you will, to, you know, as a way, as a middle finger to both Dom and to, you know, for the German guy, his dad. So it, the story works perfectly, and the motives behind everything works perfectly. It's just, that was the only thing that was my big hang up was, you know, Dom not being Dom being still upset over it. Maybe that's just personal. Maybe that's just my personality.
I think an essential piece of him being able to forgive him is that knowledge that Jacob didn't mean to kill their father. Like knowing why Jacob did what he did. I think that's a big part of the forgiveness aspect, because it was kind of like an innocent mistake, in a sense.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those things a father is putting a son in a difficult spot. Like, you know, it's either we cheat the race, or we, you know, cheat the race and risk everything, or we lose everything. So it's a tough spot, and then Jacob just lives with the consequence of that tough spot. You know, and that's to me, it is a very, like, Jacob's story is very powerful, and it's a great introduction to the character. That was just my only qualm. Everything else, like, the action works, and you brought up, you know, I think, David, you were the one that brought up that Dom and Letty, especially Letty, like, they're, you know, both struggling with assimilating to family life. I love that, but I also believe, you know, Letty and Dom, they want it. They want to have a family life, but they don't want a family life where little Brian is going to, you know, is having to hide every time a car comes up. And for me, I feel like that's really the great start of this trilogy, or now that it's a trilogy, is, you know, Dom and Letty, you know, learning to assimilate to family life, but also kind of growing up as well, learning to live without the guns, the bullets, the fast cars, and risking everything. And that's what, it's like, what I love about F9 is it starts a new trilogy, but ends another as well. You know, It grows everyone up, but also puts everyone on a new path towards finally being mature, growing up, and being one big happy family, like, for real, like for real. Yeah. What else stood out for you guys?
I love the opening action sequence. I don't remember where they were at. But with the landmines and the car swinging across the the cavern. I mean, that was a lot of fun. That was a fun sequence. And I love, you know, to come out of that Romans kind of, you know, nod to the fact that, you know, they're seemingly invincible. I thought that was just kind of like a fun referential wink to the fact that they can go through, you know, all of this crazy stuff, you know, jumping from car to car across the freeway, and, you know, just barely miss being hit by like a giant boulder. So I thought that was a fun little tip of the hat.
There was a lot of meta humor in this movie.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And I love Roman's like line delivery, because he really is starting to believe, oh my God, are we superheroes? What happened? Like, and then everyone's just laughing at him about it, but it's great. But it goes, but the movie, it's nice to be self, you know, not winking at itself, but it's never like breaking the sincerity, because they still like catch John Cena with a with a big magnet in his car. And yeah. John Cena's just still like, I'm still here in my car in this truck. Which the magnets in this movie, I mean, great use. Like it was a lot of fun. What did everybody think of the magnets?
Genius.
Yeah, it was really cool to see. I thought that was a fun element. I also like how I think that they've done a good job, especially like I think 7 and onwards of like making use of the technology that's been introduced, like the God's Eye, and with Cypher's hacking ability and remote piloting. It's nice that they don't forget that stuff, because I feel like sometimes in franchises they introduce this big, world-altering technology, and then like it's never used again when it would be super helpful. So I like the fact that they do find ways to incorporate the stuff that they've introduced. Sometimes it's beaten out by a newer development or a newer technology, but I do like the fact that they're consistent with how they use it.
Yeah, Cypher beat God's Eye in 8. Or she used God's Eye to find Nobody.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Also, Cypher is just a brilliant... She literally is our Thanos of this franchise. Like, she is going to be the recurring villain of this franchise until the end.
Which I'm looking forward to seeing, like, Charlize Theron get in on the action. Because, like, I know that she, we've seen her do great action stuff before, whether it's Fury Road or Atomic Blonde. So I feel like they've like really like set the stakes with the character. She's had like a lot of intense dialogue scenes and kind of showing her ruthlessness, but we haven't really seen her in action yet. And so I think that's one of the things that I'm really excited to see in the last two, is to see her get her hands dirty and to show that she's a capable combatant as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I am too. I also want her to change her hairstyle from movie to movie, because because her hair from F8 and then the choice she has for F9, it's definitely a choice. And I don't know why she wasn't in this one as much. I guess they just didn't have a whole. They just wanted her to be there, I guess. I don't know if that was
I wish she had been in it more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably my only like major complaint. I wanted more Charlize Theron. So I hope in these last two that she has, a bunch of scenes, a major role.
Mm-hmm. But she's still menacing. I mean, she's still more of a threat in this movie than Fate. Like, she's a bigger threat here because she can manipulate everyone. She can manipulate all these massive egos and use them and weaponize them to attack each other, and she's doing it from while she's imprisoned. It's the whole like Loki in the it's a whole Loki thing in Avengers 1 where he's getting the best out of everyone even though he's still in the cage. Great stuff. When she's flying the plane at the end of the movie, I know we're jumping around a bit, and Dom flips the car over and then the car ricochets and it hits the drone plane. The amount of applause that got, from my theater, it just was like, from everyone thinking for like a hot minute that Charlize Theron, that Cypher had died. And then the amount of like, from, when they realized it was a drone. Yeah. What was y'all's reaction to the twist with the drone plane?
I knew she wouldn't be dead. I just felt like that would be way too easy and we hadn't gotten enough of her in this movie, and just like based on what we'd seen in Fate, her ability to hack into other vehicles and control them remotely, I did think it was like a, you know, a cool reveal, but I definitely didn't think that she was dead.
Oh, my audience, they were cheering. They thought she was dead. So yeah, I might have heard a few obscenities, like, you know. Yeah, it was, yeah. What about you, David?
Oh, I didn't quite buy that she was dead, but I didn't predict like the exact circumstances of how she survived or whatever. I didn't expect that she was piloting the drone necessarily, but I didn't think they would kill her off that easily, that quickly. I don't know. It seemed off, like with how little screen time she had in the movie.
On one hand, though, I agree with both of what you're saying, but I would also point out that would be like the greatest way for her to go out. Just this smart character who's using her skills to, like, you know, in techware to, you know, go out, and she has to go out on this plane, and then she gets taken out by the dumbest freaking thing that could ever happen to someone. Like the one in a million shot. Like, it's just, yeah, it's whatever. I think the other thing we haven't mentioned yet is Roman and Tej, they go to space.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they finally went to space. And when, you know, that finally happened, I gasped, like, just like, it's finally happening. They're going to space. Now we just need Vin Diesel to go up and punch the moon.
Well, I do feel like that in the next one, I feel like Mr. Nobody is definitely going to have them like set up in like a space station as their new base. I feel like
genuine question. I was a little bit confused. Is Mr. Nobody still alive? Like, I know his plane went down.
I think I feel like if there's no body, I feel like with a character like him, I just kind of assume that he's
okay.
Still out there, yeah.
And we didn't see him die, so
it was just left so ambiguous that I wasn't really sure.
Yeah, because I mean, it's weird. We don't see him for rest of the movie, but he appears in the one transmission and then one flashback. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if I did miss that, but I guess he's just still somewhere, even though he left his like precious cargo, even if he survived. Whatever.
It was weird. Like, I guess on that subject, I feel like we're about to get into Han. It was weird to me to see them retcon their retcon, like, of their franchise, you know?
And still have the guys from Tokyo Drift in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did everybody think about Han coming back?
I mean, I don't really expect this franchise to make much sense anymore, so I was okay with it. I definitely feel like the trailer showed too much. And I didn't even, I'm not someone that like goes out of my way to watch every new trailer or anything like that. Just from the trailers I saw before other movies recently, I like this trailer especially, I felt like it showed too much.
Yeah, I would have loved it if we didn't know that Han was coming back until like actually seeing the movie. I feel like that would have been a really cool reveal. I do feel like the trailer showed like every scene that he was in, essentially. But I feel like that would have been such a cool moment, like to experience in theaters him coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would have again, you know, that would have been cool, like especially keep it away from the teaser. My only thing is, I mean, could they have kept it that long? Because remember, they also had to, they also delayed this movie a whole year and a year and a month. I don't know if they could have kept that under wraps for that long. Because I mean, even now, like, you know, months before Black Widow comes out, we knew that Florence Pugh was going to take over the mantle of Black Widow, even though that would have been a great reveal to find out later, or in the actual Black Widow movie. So I don't know how you can keep stuff. Although I'm sure
I wish Marvel, they would have tried.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. But yeah, the Han thing, it's whatever. I mean, I've seen the character die and they're still like, but he wasn't really there. What? So
maybe they'll bring Giselle back too in the next one.
She magically landed on a mattress. On a stranded mattress that was just there.
So watching Fast 6, that was weird to me because Owen Shaw is also tossed out of a plane. I would say probably that had accelerated since that point that Giselle fell off. So it's like, how did he survive? But she didn't. All she did was fall onto the tarmac. She wasn't like blown up or shot or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anything, she could have just rolled.
Yeah, Mr. Nobody did say that she was his best agent, so maybe with Gal Gadot's increased star power, maybe they'll bring her back.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, because I mean it's possible, but I mean it's all depending on like her schedule, because I mean she's working on Cleopatra, which I don't know if that's still happening, but she's working on Cleopatra, and then assuming all goes to plan, she might be on another Wonder Woman related movie soon.
I think that may be a while because Patty Jenkins is going to be tied up with Rogue Squadron in the near future, so
we'll see. Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I would love to see her back. I mean, get everyone back. Like, have your Portals moment in F11. Just have Giselle just show up. Have everyone back, like just go for it.
On that note, did y'all think they were going to actually show Brian at the end? Like, I was like, are they going to actually, because I remember I saw some leak or I saw something like several months ago that like people were saying that they put Brian in this movie and that they like brought Paul Walker's brothers back again. And they filmed
stuff with I'd heard that too. And I wonder, like, part of me thinks that they're gonna like save that until like the very last one. And so like they're kind of like, I guess like respectfully teasing it. I don't know, you know.
I was glad they didn't, I think it was handled well at the end, but I was kind of worried for a second. I was like, are they gonna like show him right now? And that like, I feel like it's best to like let him be like how 7 ended. I felt like that was a great departure for the character and a great send off.
Yeah.
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 I feel like maybe we'll get like a silhouette or something in the last one. At least.
So I thought they would, because Wikipedia had it listed that Paul Walker was back in F9 as a cameo. But then again, Wikipedia can always be wrong, sometimes. But what I will say, I'm glad they didn't. And I'm kind of wishing they wouldn't. Like, just let it.
Yeah.
He had a great departure. Like, and also, and Richard, you brought this up perfectly. De-aging technology has come a long way. And it's worked in certain areas, but I don't know if everyone would be okay with another Tarkin situation where the character is CGI and they just have him around. I don't know, because I don't know if everyone would be okay with that. And because I don't know. Would you guys want him to appear in these movies or no?
No.
No.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know why the franchise keeps, you say respectfully teasing it. I don't even know if it's respectful, because it's just like dangling us like, hey, we might have Brian. Oh, no, we don't.
I guess I just think about it in terms of like the perspective of Vin Diesel and the cast of just like how close they were with Paul Walker. And like, I guess, you know, just based on what Vin Diesel has said, it's just like still like trying to honor what he wanted to do and his place in the franchise. So I feel like it's a tough area to navigate.
I feel like they kind of got stuck in a weird situation by bringing Mia back, because it kind of feels like they were kind of obligated to by bringing in Jacob, because it's like, oh, if there's this long lost brother we never heard of, wouldn't Dom's sister want to get involved somewhat? And then like by bringing her in, you have to explain where Brian's at. And I felt like they had a good throwaway line for that. And so I thought that was all that there was going to be to it. And then when his car drove up, I was like, are they going to actually commit to this? What's happening right now?
Yeah, I wish they wouldn't just like have throwaway lines, like have him be the babysitter. It's fine. Also, like Brian and Mia have a nice get up where they're at. So it's cool. So, and then I guess to round it out here, Justice is coming for Han, but in the next movie. So a little misleading in the...
But it's like Justice for Han, even though he wasn't actually killed, and Deckard Shaw was part of this weird, like, cover-up, fake death, like...
That he may or may not have known. Justice is there
anymore.
God, this franchise is weird. But it's fun. It's a fun weird. So what did we going into it, what did everybody think of the mid-credits scene where Deckard is back?
It was cool to see Deckard. I mean, but kind of like what we were just saying, you know, I mean, Han didn't die. Deckard didn't actually kill him. So don't really, you know, other than the conversation of being like, I guess you intended to kill me. Here I am, but I don't know. I mean, it does make me hope that Deckard will return in the next one, and Hobbs too. I miss them.
I was kind of under the impression that by doing Hobbs and Shaw, they were kind of like splintering the franchise, and I didn't expect him to come back. And so I'm guessing, I feel like they wouldn't include this post-credit scene unless they intended to bring him in.
Right. For me, I'm kind of glad Hobbs wasn't in this movie, because I'm kind of getting tired. I like The Rock. It's just, I feel like his current shtick for this franchise isn't really working.
He practically plays the same character in all mainstream movies that he's been doing for like the last 6 years.
And that's a problem. Because if you're just playing the same person over and over
again. I do want to see Hobbs versus Jacob, though. Hobbs versus Jacob would be fun. So I'd be into that for one of these next two movies.
Same. I mean, even John Cena has teased it. So I'm into it, but I'm kind of like, you know, but I'm, can we get the Hobbs we had in F5 and F6? You know, because I feel like the one we've had in F8 and Hobbs and Shaw is kind of becoming, it's too gradually different. Like, it's becoming too, like, just winking at the audience. Like, yeah, I know this is a dumb line. I know this is all stupid, but we're having fun. So, yeah, I'm, it's fine if they bring Hobbs back. I don't care. I honestly, trying to think what else. Oh, the action set pieces. We brought up the magnets, but I mean, so many cars get destroyed in this movie. like because of the magnets. And I feel, and I love Justin Lin's like vehicular destruction in all of his like films, because it all has like theme and meaning, and like it has stuff behind it. Like, you know, I mean, Lin uses the cars for each character that what they're driving. It's like their superhero suit in a way. And then
where is my super suit?
Okay. Fine. Okay, all right. But yeah, but you get what I'm saying. Like, he uses the cars as a super suit, or he uses it as like a, you know, hand, you know, to catch, you know, people. I mean, it's, and then he uses like the cars of Jacob and Dom coming together to try and flip this, you know, van over, this convoy. It's like a symbol of them coming together. I mean, it's all simple stuff, but it's still like, hey, put some meaning behind your action set pieces instead of it just being mindless, like, destruction.
Oh, if we have a cameo.
Cat cameo. What did you guys think of Justin Lin's vehicular destruction?
I enjoyed it. Yeah, it was, I mean, cool to look at. I feel like that's part of the big screen experience of Fast and Furious movies, watching a bunch of vehicles blow up.
David?
Totally agree. I think we kind of touched on, I guess, each of the major set pieces at least once throughout as we've been talking. But I mean, the use of the magnets was really creative and cool. I hadn't really seen it. Not that I haven't seen magnets used in action movies before, but not really like this. So it was creative. I mean, them going to space was exciting. The landmine thing we talked about. I liked, we haven't really talked about this at all, but John Cena's little zip line gun thing that he had, that he was like running around roofs on London. That was cool.
Yeah,
it is. It's like a little Batman, like it's like a little Batman, his little Batman grappling gun, hook. a grappling hook. Yeah, that's his Spider-Man power. Or yeah, he's just swinging through the city of London or Edinburgh. I love the action. Oh, we forgot, Helen Mirren is also in this movie.
She is, yeah. She has a fun scene.
Gosh, she is having a blast being in this franchise. I don't know if she's really like driving. She definitely isn't driving any of the cars, but she's having a blast pretending she's in an action scene. So is there anything else to talk about for F9, like for this review? All right. What are you guys looking forward to in F10 and F11? Or what are your kind of hopes?
Well, now Arnold Schwarzenegger being cast, and you put the seed in my mind, and I need to see it flourish.
I would have also suggested Sylvester Stallone come back as Dom's father, because why not? But, you know, I'm sure this franchise has put that to bed now.
Dom's father didn't really die either. You know, that was a cover-up by Mr. Nobody. It's been going back since, like, so many years.
It'll be the plot. Mr. Nobody needed Dom's father for a secret covert mission that went horribly wrong, and now Dom's father just had to be in hiding for so long. Lord, that would be funny. So if you had to choose, which one would play Dom's father in the modern days?
Well, I don't know that either of them would really resemble the actor they had, because he seemed more like Latin. So I don't think either of them could really pull that off. So I would want them in either of them or both. It's a, like a new character, maybe like someone that's working with Charlize Theron. I don't know. They don't have to like actually be related to any of the characters, but.
All right. Richard, what about for you? Expectations or casting?
I really just want to see Charlize Theron get on some more action sequences. I mean, that's my big hope. I think she's a fantastic actress, a great addition to the franchise, a villain like one that we haven't seen before. So that'd be real cool to see. I think it'd be cool if they brought Eva Mendes back from Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yes, absolutely. The portal scene.
Yeah, in the portal scene.
Yeah. I'm now just imagining like a portal scene of just like, it's not even portals, it's just cars, like different cars just showing up. Like you have one with Giselle, one with Eva Mendes, one with Cole Hauser.
Ja Rule.
You have Ja Rule shows up. You have the gang from Tokyo Drift show up. You have the bad guy from F4 show up. Yeah. You have Vince's son from Fast Five, you know, as a teenager, he's there. Yeah, just make it crazy. Just make it absolutely nutso. But also play the Alan Celebrity portal scene while it happens. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for the future. The only thing I would say is I kind of wish this was, in a way, the last movie, because when you watch Furious 7 really is a growing up story for Paul Walker's character. And then they continue that idea forward with Dom by making him a father and assimilating, or not assimilating, that sounds terrible. By, you know, making him a father now and, you know, become and making him, you know, bringing him into fatherhood and bringing Letty into, you know, into her own kind of, you know, motherhood that she wanted at the beginning of Fate and the Furious. So, and I really would have loved this idea if F9 was like the final story for that, where everyone kind of just, this is it, this is everybody growing up. But I guess we'll get that in F10 and F11. So interesting enough. All right. So with that, starting with you, Richard, do you have a book that you want to talk about or want to promote?
Yeah, I do. It's called We Make Monsters Here. It's a collection of horror short stories exploring 21st century anxieties. I worked on it for about 10 years. Really proud of it. It is available on Amazon, and the link is in my Twitter bio, which is at Richard L. Newby.
All right, awesome. David, do you have a blog you want to promote?
Yeah, it's called Film Assessment. I haven't written my review of F9 yet. I've got a lot of things going on. And then you can follow my Twitter, where I haven't tweeted about the movie, but I tweet other things. Anyways, it's wiser_David, and then I have a Twitter handle for the blog, Film Assessment, as well. And thanks for having me again.
No problem. All right, so for the listeners, we will not have a podcast next week because I am not really that interested in The Forever Purge or Boss Baby 2.
What are you talking about? Boss Baby 2, that's going to be Best Picture winner. You know?
Oh, I wished. I wish it was going to be that good. I don't really have time to watch those, and then Loki will still continue on for another couple weeks. So we will have a special episode coming out sometime next week. It'll be a retrospective. I don't want to announce it yet just in case the movie gets changed around. But we will have another retrospective in between this one. And then the week after that, we will do Black Widow. And then we'll continue on as forward. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Richard, David, thank you all so much for joining me on the F9 podcast. And everybody,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody, have a great night. Thank you.
Your whole life, you pushed yourself to be faster than Dom, smarter than Dom, stronger than Dom. But could you kill him? Because I'm ready if you are.
There's nothing more powerful than the love of family. But you turn that into anger, there's nothing more dangerous.
Maybe this is the end, but we won't go out together.
You know I'd ride to the death with you.
Let's get to work.
Please tell me that's not a Pontiac Fiero strapped to a rocket engine?
Impressive. I know.
No. No, that's not impressive.
My ass is in fuego!
Take you down, little brother.
That's your mistake. This is my world.
Damn, they got a magnet plane?
Hold on.
Tell me you're not thinking what I think you're thinking.
There's no bridge!
Hell no.
Nice clubhouse.